It's Smashville. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. 7 o'clock on the dot here on a Thursday. Nikhail Bradengall, Derek Mason, the Constable Chase McCabe, live this morning inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. The Predators and the Penguins tonight. March Madness getting underway officially, or technically today, 11:15 Central Time. If you're a guy that believes it's really a field of 64 and not 68, well, today's your day.
Can it be both?
I think it is. I mean, I get texts from my buddies saying, oh, this first four doesn't count. If they've expanded to 68, the last two nights, they're tournament games, and they're tournament wins.
But we can also say the real action starts today.
True.
I think both things can exist.
Yeah, true. The tournament started 2 days ago. But
the real juice.
Where the brackets start today.
Mm-hmm. And you can keep changing your picks this morning. So
you got up until noon.
I just got done eating a protein bar. I still have a little bit of it kind of like stuck in my teeth. You ever see that commercial for Verizon a couple of years ago with the guy? He's got like 12 different cookies, and he jams them in his mouth, and he calls his buddy at work. He's like, hey, Schmitty, guess how many cookies you got in my mouth?
We need to study your brain when you die.
Makes for great radio, by the way.
Yeah. We need to study your brain.
I agree.
What made you even go to that commercial? No. I don't remember that commercial. I'm sorry.
I don't either.
Did they only show that in Philly?
I'll find it for you on YouTube.
That sounds like a riveting commercial break.
Oh, man.
What
do you guys do during the commercial breaks? We look at commercials.
We surf YouTube. Yeah. Well, this musical release could very well end up being a YouTube sensation. I'm going to hand it off to the Constable, Chase McCabe, to usher us in to a new musical release. So, Chaser, take it away here on a Thursday morning.
So, yesterday, there was a suggestion that was thrown out there about a song title. And not Josh Upton is always listening, except during Stick to Sports. But he's always listening. And this morning I checked my email, and there is a song that is entitled Know It All. Take it away.
You speak, you finish up your point, then we pass it on around the room. By now, you should have realized that's exactly what we gotta do. You don't believe that anybody knows the things you do about this town. We let you talk on and on in the hopes that you'll tire out. You're sure they've heard it all before, but you're never gonna shut your mouth. You don't believe that anybody knows the things you do about this town. 3 mics are on, but only one man's talking. Even in a commercial break, you won't stop squawking. There are many things that I would like to say on the show, but I don't get time. Said maybe you're the one that's gonna save us in the ratings, but Bradengall, you're a know-it-all.
Hey, can we leave work now? Play that on a loop for the next 3 hours, and we are out of here, okay?
Full disclosure.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so
Not
good.
Not Josh Upton just took that and ran with it.
That's so good. That's so good.
And now my phone is blowing.
Oh, that's so good.
I haven't done sit-ups in about a decade. But now I know what it will feel like because my abs are killing me.
I have no words.
That might have been the best thing I've heard on radio in a very long time.
What was his first one titled?
Oh, my goodness.
This one is better.
The chair. Well, it was the chair.
The chairs. That's right. The chairs.
That was the first.
Oh, God. Oh, Josh, we're going to have to put an EP together for Josh here pretty soon.
Buck, your thoughts.
Accurate.
Josh Upton, I'm gonna give Josh Upton some career advice. Get out of sports radio and just go into music.
No, see, I think he's found his sweet spot. Because his sweet spot is music on sports radio.
That is really good.
That was fantastic, dude.
Three mics are on.
I do particularly like the line about how he's going to save the ratings. I do like that.
Oh, my goodness.
I like that line.
Oh, man.
What band is the actual, and what's the name of the
Oasis.
Truth?
Oasis. Oasis. Wonderwall. Oh, yeah. Man. That was a pretty. That was off the cuff idea by you, Chase, and good on Josh. That is brilliant.
I just I text.
Screw you, Buck. You're a
know-it-all. I texted him. I said, "Hey, this came up on the show. Can you do something with this?" God. And he's like, "Do you just want the chorus, or do you want me to write a verse?" I'm like, "If you want to write a verse, write a verse.
Yeah, write a verse."
It was good.
Okay, so let's get to some Tennessee Titans.
Well, yeah, let's get to sports.
No, do we have a second musical release coming? Do we have that option as well?
I don't know. Did you email it to me?
Buck, I texted you the audio file.
Yeah, and I told you
to
email it to me.
No work doing, idiot. Take the stupid text and get it into the computer and get us our stinking song.
I don't know how to do that. Email it to me.
I know everything. Didn't you hear the song?
Yeah.
Well, so if you know so much, figure out how to email it to me.
No, I know how to email it to you. You are the one who's supposed to do the work.
Yeah,
it's your
but
job.
I'm not
do the
going
work.
To, so if you would like it played, email it to me.
Just do what I've done on occasion on the show.
Email load it to yourself.
Load it up on the phone. Stick your phone up next to your microphone and play it through that way.
That's a terrible.
Yeah,
we've got a couple of other Upton, not Josh Upton tracks in the works. One's about lettuce, and one's about contemplations.
Well, meanwhile, if you would like that one played, email it to me.
All right, we've got Peter Laviolette's coming up at the bottom of the hour, but let's get to some Titans discussion because I saw this yesterday. Field Yates had put out a tweet. And Field Yates is kind of an interesting guy. Like, he does some, like, insider stuff. He does some analysis. He does fantasy. He gives out statistical trends with research. And this is an interesting little trend here. So, in 2018 in the NFL, target distribution by position. Wide receivers league-wide were targeted only 59% of the time. The other 41% of passes went to running backs and tight ends. Running backs 21% of the time, tight ends 20% of the time. Is this new age NFL where receivers versus non-receivers is close to a 50-50 split, can we make the case that that actually could be beneficial to the Tennessee Titans, a team that we would like to see more of with the receiver position?
First of all, Derek, I don't know how you feel as a wide receiver with wide receivers getting less targets, it feels. I don't know how you feel about that personally. You got a running back who caught 60 passes. You've got two tight end sets. I don't know how it doesn't benefit the Tennessee Titans. I think the trend itself is fascinating, that we're just using a lot more weapons in the passing game.
Because I was surprised by that.
I mean, teams are becoming more multiple.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what's the old adage, the more things change, the more they stay the same? If you look back, tight ends were targeted just as much as wide receivers back in the day because the short passing game, if they threw it to a wide receiver, it was typically deep. They used a short to intermediate game with the tight ends. And then, you know, you got the West Coast offense, you know, San Fran and the old San Diego Chargers with Dan Fouts. And those guys, they start, and then the Miami offense, they started to really open up the Air Coryell. They really started to open up things, and started making the wide receivers more of a commodity than anything else. And now what you're starting to see is, it's starting to revert back. But now they're adding in the running back also, because they're using these passes. You guys have heard it. New England does it better than anybody. They use the short passing game as an extension of the running game. When they can't run the football, they get a Deion Lewis or one of these other backs that are good running backs, but I can throw you a a pass behind the line of scrimmage and you get 5 yards. Essentially, that's a running play. So, or I can throw it to you 2 yards down the field, you get 7. That's a running play to
right,
them.
Right.
So what they're starting to do now is they're starting to use the short passing game to, because guys are more explosive now, guys are quicker and faster, so I can give it to the tight end or the running back out of the backfield or at 3 yards, and they can get me 10, 15 yards because of their athleticism. Back in the day, if you wanted 15 yards or 20 yards, you had to throw it down the field or you had to get it to a wide receiver. Now that's not the case. You got running backs running faster than wide receivers. Tight ends running faster than running backs, you know? So they don't have to necessarily use the wide receiver all the time. They can split it up between the tight end, the running back, and then the guy on the outside.
We will take this conversation to the next level when we come back, because many people have mock drafts with the Titans at 19 going tight end. It's a complete joke. Braden Gall has the research to back it up as to why it would probably not work. We'll get into that next live here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 A Game. Seven 15 as we continue on here on this Thursday. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Are the Predators heating up at the perfect time? We'll get the head coach's perspective, Peter Laviolette. Coffee with the coach. We'll talk to Lavi in just about 15 minutes. But we were just discussing kind of a little bit of a nerdy approach to football, but I'll be damned if I don't love it. The 2018 NFL target distribution by position, and this is imperative, certainly based on the Titans with their receivers and the tight ends, and we discussed how it's basically 60-40 in favor of the receivers, and maybe that's a good thing for the Titans. Let's take a deep dive into this, because we've seen mock drafts. We've seen people taking or mocking the Titans at 19 going tight end. You've got the research that says you can get great tight ends beyond the first round.
Well, so I think TJ Hockenson is a unique case because he is the complete package. He's both the blocker in line, also the athletic guy that can catch passes. I don't think, you know, Noah Fant's in the same category. I don't think there's other tight ends in the same category, at least not at the top. So if you believe, you know, TJ Hockenson is Tony Gonzalez good, and he can do everything, Jason Witten good, you know, Travis Kelce good, then okay, fine, we can discuss that. And I don't want to take that completely off the table, because taking a great player off your board for no reason other than you've already got two of them is not necessarily the right thing to do. So here's what I looked at. I looked at a couple of different things. Who were the best tight ends in the NFL last year, and where did they get drafted? And then which tight ends have gone in the first round, right? So what do you get when you draft a tight end in the first round? Listen to these names over the last 10 years. Who's been drafted in the first round? Hayden Hurst was drafted last year by the Baltimore Ravens. He caught 13 passes. 2 years ago, you had O.J. Howard, Evan Engram, and David Njoku. There's some talent there. O.J. Howard is a guy I like. Njoku started to blossom with Baker Mayfield. Ingram's caught a lot of passes, but he is not a blocker. He's basically a wide receiver, and he drops a ton of passes. And then you have to go all the way back to 2014, so we skipped 2 years. 16 and 15 have no tight ends. Eric Ebron drafted 10th overall in the first round by the Lions. He has to get cut by the team and not pick up – they don't pick up his fifth-year option before he lands with the Colts and becomes a quality option for Andrew Luck and the best offensive line and the best turnaround in football last year. 2013, Tyler Eifert. 2010, Jermaine Gresham. 2009, Brandon Pettigrew. Any of those names stand out to you as elite players? Any of those guys?
Nope.
That's 34 combined seasons in the last 10 years of first-round draft picks at tight end. That's 34 combined seasons played in the NFL, 4 Pro Bowls. So basically, no one has found an elite tight end in the first round for a decade, at least. Now, let's look at tight ends from last year who caught a bunch of passes, right? The most productive tight ends in football. Zach Ertz, number one, 116 catches, second-round pick. Travis Kelce, number two, third-round pick. George Kittle, number three, fifth-round pick. Austin Hooper, number four, third-round pick. Jared Cook, of all people, number five, third-round pick. Eric Ebron checks in at number six. Again, also a guy that didn't do it on his original team. Didn't pick up the fifth-year option. Kyle Rudolph, number seven, second-round pick. Then you got to get all the way to number eight, David Njoku, who was a first-round pick, of course. Jimmy Graham after that, third-round pick. Trey Burton after that, undrafted free agent. Jordan Reed after that, third-round pick. Who are the best tight ends in the history of the state of Tennessee? Let's just go one more step. Jason Witten, right? One of the Hall of Famer, one of the greatest tight ends in all of NFL history, third-round pick. The two most important Titan tight ends of all time, Frank Wycheck and Delaney Walker, both sixth-round picks. Are we seeing a trend here? You do not find value in the first round when you take a tight end, and all the best tight ends in the NFL are taken in the second, third, and fourth rounds. So, to me, it doesn't seem like a smart investment of resources to take a tight end when you already have two of them, and history shows you that you can find him in the second and third round, and that when you take him in the first round, you don't get a lot for him.
Well, here's the thing with the whole tight end situation. The NFL is different now. And whereas past years, I think you could find a tight end in the third, fourth, fifth round. You talk some of these, you know, guys that are either Hall of Famers, whether it's Shannon Sharp, or any other tight end out there, or the tight ends of today that didn't necessarily get drafted in the last two or three years. The tight end position is a lot different than it is now. I think now they view the tight end more so as a receiver. So if you want a top-notch receiver, what do? You draft him in the first round. You draft him high. If you want that game-changing, you know, bona fide guy, a Julio Jones or Odell Beckham or, you know, guys that – now, you're going to have your outliers. I know that, but – the last couple of years, the guys that have got drafted in the first round, they've made do at the wide receiver position. And that's the way these GMs and scouts are looking at it. If there is a transcending tight end, a guy that we feel can change the landscape of our offense, then we're going to take him. Now, yes, you're going to find tight ends in the third, fourth, fifth round. That's just the way it is. But because of the way the NFL is now, and we see it, more tight ends are getting bigger numbers. They are more likely to draft a tight end in the first round if he has a first round grade. You know, you look at Fant?
Noah Fant. Yeah.
Noah Fant.
He's not really a blocker. He's the
and the other kid from Hawkinson. Those two guys, and then Irv Smith from Alabama. Those guys they consider guys they can plug in right away, and they can produce. So they're not going to get to the second round. So if you need a tight end, you need to draft him in the first round because a tight end allows you the ability to get a mismatch because 9 times out of 10, they're being guarded by a linebacker or a safety. And if a team feels they have to put a corner on a tight end, and then that opens them up for the team to run the football because now that really extra guy is taken out.
I agree with everything you're saying, but the data shows you that all of those difference makers that you get, you don't draft in the first round. The data shows you. Zach Ertz, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Jared Cook, Austin Hooper, Kyle Rudolph, Jimmy Graham. The last transcendent tight end taken in the first round, if you want to call it that, you got to go back to 2008.
What round was
Greg Olsen?
What round was Gronk?
Gronk was a third-round pick or second-round pick. Aaron Hernandez, third-round pick. Like, the last transcendent tight end – would you guys call Greg Olsen transcendent? I'm not sure I'd say transcendent.
Nah, but like, at his peak, he's probably the third best tight end.
But he's
game.
A really good player, right? Yeah. The last really good player taken at tight end in the first round is probably Greg Olsen, and you've got to go back 12 years in the draft
to find
that guy.
If you look at the Titans, though, it's like if you're gonna point out the fact that they have still yet to address edge rusher, I don't know how you neglect the defensive front. For a tight end, unless you believe 100%.
He better be Tony Gonzalez.
Hawkinson is that good, and you can line him up all over the field, and he's a matchup nightmare.
But what you guys keep forgetting is that, and we've harped on this for the last 2 months, this is a deep defensive line or, you know, rush in or outside linebacker class. There has been in a while. So if that is indeed the case, if I still feel I can find that guy, it's like, okay, do I get the tight end that could potentially be a game changer? And between him and the next tight end, there's a wide gap. So do I get him now and then get that defensive guy in the second round? Because if we are to believe that this is a deep defensive end, outside rush, linebacker class, then I can get a guy in the second round.
But you just talked about it.
That can rush the passer.
You said the drop-off, right?
Yeah, as far as tight end.
Because I think the drop-off is Hockenson, and that's it. If Hockenson is, to me, the only three-down tight end that can block and be a matchup athletically in space. Fant is not going to be a blocker. He's more of just an athlete in space. Irv Smith is very undersized at like 6'2", 240. Like, he is not.
But in today's NFL, I'm taking those guys.
And that's fine. In the second round, like Zach Ertz and Travis Kelce and George Kittle and Austin Hooper, these guys are all taken later in the draft. The key, you're right about the defensive line draft depth. What we need to explain to people is where the drop-off is for the defensive end and outside linebacker and defensive line class.
But if you're J-Rob, like at 19, like, do you sit there and say, what do I value more? Giving Marcus everything he needs to succeed, which would be tight end, or am I going to try to make Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson's life a living hell by going with a war daddy?
Those are both good explanations. I mean, those are both things that we would like to see him do. My literal point at looking at the top 12 tight ends is that all of them, with the exception of David Njoku, either came later in the draft.
Yep.
That's the point. The point is every single one of these difference makers that plays every single Sunday and is a huge commodity for their quarterback is taken in the second round, third round, fifth round, third round, third round, second round, third round, undrafted. They're all taken later. There has not been a difference maker taken in the first round at tight end since Greg Olsen in 2008. It's been 12 years since that's happened. If you believe Hockenson is that guy and he is Tony Gonzalez, then I'm fine with that. I'm okay with taking a third tight end as a luxury draft pick at 19. The difference about the defensive line class, it's not about there's so much depth where you can get one at 57 in the second round. The drop-off, the point of that is that at 19, you're getting a top 10 player. That's the difference. You're getting a guy that normally would be a top 10 player in any other draft. You're getting him at 19.
But
that's because the drop-off for the defensive line is right after the first round. I mean, Chase Winovich is probably going to be the Harold Landry of this year's draft class out of Michigan. He probably is a high early second-round pick. After that, I don't see a whole lot of game-changing defensive ends being drafted in the NFL in the second, third, and fourth round. The Von Millers of the world and the J.J. Watts of the world and the Aaron Donalds of the world, all these elite-level defensive line players in the NFL, they are drafted in the first round. The point is, tight ends are not. That's my only argument.
You can because the jury's still out on Evan Engram and O.J. Howard. And those are two of the three guys drafted in the first round. It's only their second year.
I like O.J. I think O.J. can
Hayden
be pretty
Hurst,
good.
You know, for Baltimore, he dealt with injury. And then they had another Mark Andrews, who was a monster this year because of Hayden Hurst got injured. But if you look at the last 2 years, the jury's still out on these guys that were drafted in the first round. All I'm saying is that if I'm the Tennessee Titans and there are 52 defensive ends / linebackers and there's three tight ends, and out of the 52 defensive guys, say 20 of them will be Pro Bowl, All-Pro, transcendent players. And out of the tight ends,
There's one, and
I got a chance to get one of them, then I'm going to get the tight end, and I'm rolling the dice on a defensive guy because right now I've always said the Tennessee Titans defense is the only thing they can hang their hat on. So what do I need to do then? I need to go surround Marcus with a bunch of talent.
But what's the biggest hole in the roster? Pass rush. That's the biggest hole in the roster right now.
But
and
that's the best part of it.
Justin Houston.
You can find, again, the evidence shows you can find tight ends later in the draft. There is not a lot of evidence that you can find difference-making pass rushers later in the draft. That's simple. That's a simple fact.
Coming up next, another simple fact. It's Coffee with the Coach time. We do it every Thursday at 7:30 this week. The top dog, the head boss, head coach Peter LaViolette will join us here on Morning Drive. As we welcome you back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game, Mikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, the Constable, Chase McCabe. We are live this morning from Jack Daniels Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena, Predators and the Penguins coming up tonight. We'll talk to head coach Peter LaViolette in just a moment, as soon as we connect with the coach for another edition of Coffee with the Coach. By the way, this will be the last Coffee with the Coach with head coach Peter LaViolette for this season. Also, some good stuff on Kyle Turris coming up in the next segment. But before we connect with Lavi, I did see this yesterday. The Predators put this out on their official Twitter feed. And we love when the Players Association and the players do these, like, polls amongst peers. And sometimes they're anonymous, sometimes no. Sometimes it's like, who's the most overrated player? But there was actually a good one yesterday.
Also the same guy.
yeah, correct. And the Players Association, they were asked, you know, who would make the best TV analyst once they retire? Mm-hmm. And let's just take a guess as to who won that poll.
PK Subban.
Kevin Fiala?
I mean, PK has shown.
That mean spirited?
He's shown that he has personality. He has charisma. He has charm. He has everything that the NHL kind of frowns upon. They don't, you know, it's – let's not say frown upon, but they don't – it's not like they're promoting, you know, hey, we need a guy with charisma. We need the PK Subban. They're not promoting that. This is a guy who he takes the initiative.
We do have the head coach. Peter Laviolette joins us for another installment of Coffee with the Coach. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Hey, Coach, do you watch CNN? Yes, I got him to laugh. Yeah.
What are you going to grill me on?
Coach, I actually want to get some thoughts on something we've talked about for a majority of the season was the power play woes. But all of a sudden, the last 11 games, you guys are clicking at about a 24% clip. What has been the turnaround with the power play execution?
Did you guys see that on CNN?
No. This was on the NHL Network.
Coach, I just wanted to know what you thought about the war in Yemen.
I thought that news maybe went global. No, I mean, I like what we've been doing. We always work on it. And we're trying to get it right. It's been a problem all year. There's, you know, when you're moving through a year, there's always something that you're trying to fix or trying to work on. And this one has been, you know, this one's made some noise this year, and it's drawn a lot of attention from us to try and get it right. I think some of the additions have helped, and I think that's even taken time to get the practice time with the new pieces just to be able to get out there and work on it and breakouts and in-zone setups and, you know, what we're trying to look for. So I've seen positive signs coming from it. One of the issues is that if you look back at the games, we just haven't had an opportunity to work on it in the game. We're being dealt one power play, maybe two power plays, but it's not these nights where we're getting four or five power plays and we get the opportunity to go out there and to take what we've worked on in practice and bring it to the game. So there's never a lot of time in practice, and right now there hasn't been a lot of time in the game. So it has shown improvements. I think the new guys have done a good job. Granlund is a really good power play player, just the way he handles the puck and the way he sees the ice and able to make plays. And the two net front guys, obviously, were a big part of it as well.
Now, Coach, the last time we had you on, I brought up that question, having the new guys but not having the time to practice with these new guys to get them acclimated to what you guys like to do. And it seems like now, and you just mentioned it, it seems like now everything is starting to come into form. Is this kind of what you expected? You didn't go into it and say, hey, listen, we're getting all these guys. We're bringing them in. They're going to just hit the ice running. You thought of it more so as, hey, once we get the practice time in, then we'll kind of see where these guys fit.
Yeah. I think there's always a little bit of an adjustment period, but, you know, anybody who made any moves at the trade deadline goes through that. I think we've been dealing with it all year from – even the guys coming back from injury, Forsberg misses a game. Smith's been out some games recently. And the new guys coming back into the lineup, I think that you're always – the things are constantly moving. You have an idea and a mindset of where you'd like to get to on the lines as the playoffs approaching, but the pieces are available or not available, and it constantly keeps it moving. But the new guys, I think certainly it takes some time just to find their spot and find their place. And I do think that we're getting settled a little bit. And then the additions of people, it just takes a little bit of time. I remember back in 2006 when we did win the Cup. We had made a trade for Mark Recchi and Doug Waite, so a couple of big name players, and we had a fairly successful team. And so we brought these guys into the mix, and it wasn't right off the bat that they took off. They've got to find their place inside of our lineup and get comfortable with that as well. Those were big players at the time, big name players and first line players, and we already had first line players. And so they're settling somewhere in the lineup and on a second power play instead of a first power play. And but when the playoffs came around, they were settled. And as they played out, I think both of them registered, 15, 16, 17 points somewhere in that area. So they were both major contributors in a long playoff run. And we're hoping the same for the guys that we picked up.
I'll go ahead and get this one out of the way, Coach. Obviously, there's personal stuff involved and conditioning involved, but what is your plan and your strategy for Austin Watson moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of answered it yesterday. Yesterday was day one for Austin on the ice. The reports coming back from him being on the ice in that optional skate, he was out there with eight or nine players, was that he was in really good shape. He was able to train. He was not able to skate, and I always say, until you've skated, from a hockey standpoint, it's not like if you're running a football field all day all summer and then go to a football, maybe that helps with your conditioning inside of football, but you can't imitate the hockey stride and the conditioning of hockey. It's a different mechanism for whatever reason. So the groins and the hips and the conditioning to do that, that's what we're just paying attention to right now. Physically, Austin looked good, but it was day one, so there's no real set plan. I think once we get a better handle on a couple days, then we'll probably talk about a plan and talk to Austin about that and what we're thinking.
So your team has obviously found something, or, as the new guys are getting integrated, everybody's sort of learning together to be better, whatever. You play L.A. really well. You play one of your best hockey games probably all season in a great game for the fans, especially against San Jose. You come back and you follow it up with a shutout against Toronto. Now you get Pittsburgh and Winnipeg. What is it that you've seen from your team? And your job as a coach is to sort of continue to carry all of those things to the next level and to the next game. What have you seen from those last three or four games that you are calling on to tell your team, hey, this is what we've done well, let's continue it? And how do you do that?
It's never just paint the brush and that's it. This is what we got to do. And before these wins happened, we were talking about the first period a little bit, and we were falling behind in a game 2-0. And I'll go back to like the Carolina game. Like, I don't think we played a bad hockey game. We got caught with three penalties right away, and one of them they scored on, and they got a deflection on another goal, and it's 2-0, and we're chasing that game. I actually thought that we played a pretty good hockey game against Carolina. The margin of winning in any sport is so small. Go to a football game, win 20-17, what a brilliant game. Lose 20-17, what a horrible game. And so hockey's really no different than that, or basketball or football. And I guess it's the margin of error and the margin of what it is that we're trying to do inside the room. That little bit more consistency. Recently, I guess, a little bit better start. Get that lead. Get that first goal. Just being prepared from the start. But the margin is so small that it's something that you have to pay attention to. And I think our guys have done a pretty good job of being a little bit more consistent. It's not like we dominated Toronto from start to finish. All 60 minutes went our way. The second period was all Toronto. We had to defend a lot, and I thought we defended pretty good. And then in the third, we needed a big save from Pecs, and we were able to push in the third and collect the goals and win a hockey game. So I think just that margin of space of consistency, if you can swing that pendulum your way, then you can possibly tilt the score your way as well.
Coach, great stuff all season long. We appreciate you coming on every couple of weeks. Best of luck down the stretch. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, guys, have a good morning.
Coach, do you fill out a bracket at all? Do you pay attention to the tournament at all? Do you give you guys a chance to watch some TV today at all, or is that just totally out because you're so focused on Pittsburgh?
I'm glad you mentioned this, okay? I'm really glad you mentioned this. I have not watched a lick of college basketball. If you could just send over to Kevin Wilson a complete filled-out bracket that I could submit in my name inside of our locker room tournament, I would greatly appreciate it.
That can be done.
Whoever the basketball genius is over there.
Here's the deal.
We get one completed practice.
We can do that, but I want 10%, all right?
And I'm going to submit it. I'm going to submit it today.
We will do that, but I want 10% of the pool. That's what I want.
And I much appreciate it.
Absolutely, coach.
There he is, head coach Peter LaViolette for Coffee with the Coach. I think Lobby's going to go all 16 seats. His final four, all 16.
Hey, we just got to pick. We just got to get Yale. Who else?
Gardner.
Well, no, every, hey, no. No, everything from the Northeast. Let's just give him all the Northeast schools.
Lobby's my dude. We'll take care of him. We'll collaborate.
I just want 10. I just want a little 10-20%.
I'm sure we can negotiate that.
Just cut me off something off the top there, Coach.
The Predators hopefully springing into the postseason on a good note, and you can spring into spring on a good note with your health. All you got to do right now is check out my guy, Dr. Jason Crist at Crist Chiropractic. They're located at 2025 Mallory Lane in Cool Springs. You can book an appointment online at ChristChiropractic.com, or you can just simply give them a phone call. People still do that, right? I know people have phones and they text and they tweet, but they make calls on it as well. So here's the number, 615-771-0022. If you need a simple chiropractic adjustment, they also have spinal decompression therapy, muscle stimulation, roller table therapy. They'll get you back to feeling yourself again, your flexibility, your mobility. All of that will come back to life with Dr. Jason Crist. To do it today, do what I did. Go to ChristChiropractic.com. Whoa. 7:46, morning drive here on a Thursday.
That was a joint back in the day, man.
Give it to us, Mace.
Whoa.
That's what I was saying when you asked Peter about his like television.
So it's not like whoa?
Like whoa.
Like, yeah, that's what I thought.
What year was the like whoa? Early
2000s? Yeah, it was. But that song, that's the only hit he had, really.
Is that Logic?
That thing went, I mean, it was banging.
Am I right? Logic,
Black Rob.
Mm-hmm. Black Rob. Okay. Man, what the hell? Logic and Black Rob. That's two different.
They have a song. They have a name of a song called "Like Whoa," Logic. Or
oh,
Logic,
do they?
Yeah, it's called "Like Whoa," 2015. I don't think that's the one you guys are referring to.
That's not it.
This is early 2000s. I like the video that they did. They spent a lot of money on a video.
There's another one from Ali and AJ. I don't think that's the same either.
Not that either.
Now they're
that one's 2007.
Have you seen now that the new trend is
how many like whoa songs are there?
Taking the money that the companies are giving them, the record labels are giving them, and they're making they're filming videos basically on their cell phone now.
Really?
Yeah, and it costs them nothing. They're just keeping the money.
Well, this is along the lines of, you know, Jordan Peele, right, with Get Out as a major blockbuster motion picture with like a $1 million budget, like a tiny little budget compared to everything else. Fatboy Slim used to do that back in the day, right? Like their music videos would be like, all right, we're going to have a guy in the subway dancing to a boombox for 3.5 minutes.
That was the Praise You song.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, okay, that was cheap.
Yeah, but everybody likes it.
Right, so. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got Joe Rexroad top of the hour, but let's get to one other note on the Preds. The Constable sent this to us just a couple of minutes ago, Paul Skorbina's column in the Tennessean regarding Kyle Turris. And there's a quote from Kyle Turris that we need to explore. And this was Predators' Kyle Turris on being benched for two games. Quote, "I don't think there's anything gained," Turris said on Wednesday when asked about being scratched. Quote, "I just want to help the team any way I can. Just get into a rhythm there. It's a coach's decision." But the first sentence of that is interesting. "I don't think there is anything gained." Now, that sounds to me like a player that questions the judgment of Peter Laviolette. And I don't know that that's fair, because Kyle Turris was given every opportunity this season. He played on virtually every single line this season. I don't think he played on the first, but then again, he probably wasn't good enough to play on the first. Mm-hmm. So is that a guy that sounds a little disgruntled by a coach saying, hey, you're going to sit?
I like it. As a head coach, I would like it, because what I did irritated you. So you need to go out there and play better. Now, I would question the guy that didn't care if he got benched or not. I would question whether he really wants to play, or does he really care?
Right.
What
player's like,
exactly.
Yeah, cool, put me on the bench,
put me on the bench. I'm fine, coach. I can just
thanks,
sit
dude.
Here and
thanks,
bite
I,
on my fingernails.
I appreciate it.
But the reality is there was something gained. Colton Sissons goes to the second line.
Yeah.
You have better second line scoring, so no, Kyle, you're wrong. There was something gained. Somebody doing your job
at
a better level.
But you don't have to be benched to move him to the second line, right? Like, you can move Colton to the second line and still keep Kyle Turris on the ice, on the third and fourth line. So it's not like he had to bench him.
And that's what he probably was saying.
But being paid what he's paid, he should not be on lines 3 and 4.
No, you're absolutely right.
We all agree that he needs to be better, right? Even Kyle agrees he needs to be better. Coaching staff agrees. We all agree that he needs to be better. When he says, I don't think there's anything to be gained, I just want to help the team win any way I can, just get into rhythm here, it's a coach's decision. I don't want my player to be happy with being benched, to your point, Derek. I don't want a group of guys that are like, yeah, it's cool, coach, put me on the bench. Like, I don't want that. So I don't think there's any – like, this to me isn't super controversial. It's just, listen, I don't like being benched.
Uh-huh.
Now, guess what, Kyle? It's on you to go out and prove to everybody else that the coach was wrong. I thought he was far more active on Tuesday night against Toronto when he got back into the lineup. He didn't really score or have any major big-time plays, but he did appear to be more active, right? He appeared to be moving around the puck a lot more and being involved in the action more. So if that's what it took for him to sort of get into that mold, then there was something to be gained. But I don't expect a player to be happy about being benched. I just don't. I also think we can blow it out of proportion pretty quickly and say that, like, oh, Kyle Turris and Peter Laviolette, they're in a fight. Like, no. Like, I don't think that's the case. I just think he's unhappy with not playing.
Was there ever a moment in Tennessee or Baltimore where somebody, a notable player on either one of the teams you played on, was benched? And how did that play out when they publicly spoke about it to the media?
I'm trying to think. Has there –
well, Quentin Spain was benched last year for the Titans.
That I played with that was benched, a notable guy? No, not really.
Derrick Henry was benched last year.
I think the guys that I played with, I mean, they were not – maybe they got replaced the next following year, or they didn't get their starting job the next following year. But during the season, there was never a situation where a guy just flat out got benched.
Was Bowler benched when you were in Baltimore?
No, Bowler wasn't benched either. We didn't have nobody behind him. I mean – he wasn't benched.
Troy Smith wasn't there yet?
Yeah, no, Troy wasn't there. Troy was there. He came toward the end. But Bowler, only reason he didn't play was because he got injured. And then they brought in Troy Smith. And the only reason Joe ended up being the starter that season. Now, eventually Joe would have been the starter. But the only reason he became the starter is because Troy Smith got hurt. He didn't get hurt. He got really sick. And point where, you know, this kid had lost like 40 pounds, 50 pounds.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he had to be hospitalized. So that's how Joe ended up getting the job. But I don't think there was ever a situation when a guy got benched.
So even last year, we had Derrick Henry benched for David Fulon against the Patriots, and it turns into Derrick Henry turning into a monster in the second half. We had Quentin Spain get benched last year late in the season, and he pouts on the sidelines. Malcolm Butler started getting benched later, at some point during the season last year, and it kind of helped.
He did get benched.
Yeah, and then he kind of came back into the fold. But now there's also a difference with the NFL in packages, right? Like, well, we're in nickel package, so you're more on the field than when you're not, when we're in base defense versus third down. I mean, there's lots of different things. Buck, what I would ask you is, what was Quentin Spain's conversation? What was he like commenting-wise after the game or the week that he got benched? How did he handle it, and what did he say after that situation?
I mean, it was pretty, it was pretty unenlightening. Like, it wasn't like he was going to give us any insight onto how that conversation went. We got more out of Vrabel, if I remember correctly, than we did out of Quentin Spain. And Mike was just like, yeah, we made a change. We saw what we saw seemed to work for what we wanted to do in that particular game, and we'll take a look at it moving forward. And that was about the extent of it. They kept it pretty quiet.
Does this? I mean, and that's the Patriot way, of course. But does this sound any different than what Kyle Turris is saying here? Quote, I don't think there's anything to be gained. I just want to help the team win any way I can. Just get into a rhythm here. It's a coach's decision. There's a lot of coach speak in that answer, too.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what these guys are going to want put out into the media, in essence. They're not going to want to cause any external strife or any belief of external or internal strife. You want him to say something. Like, you don't want him to just, like Derek's saying, you don't want him to just take it. I don't think there's anything to be made out of that. I think it's a pretty human reaction.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit Quentin Spain in that moment to, like, complain about his coach. It doesn't benefit. Like, what's Kyle Turris gain from talking openly about how he's disappointed in this?
Well, especially
– all he's going to do is lose ground in the conversation.
Especially with Spain, because Mike was pretty public, like, going to bat for Quentin – often in terms of, you know, if you play well, this is a contract year, you can get paid. Even if it's not here, it'll be somewhere else. And like Mike was pretty open about how much he liked Quentin. So when your coach is publicly going to bat for you like that, I don't know if Laviolette does that for anybody. It's pretty easy to shut up.
Speaking of bad offensive linemen getting paid, I guess one man's trash is another man's treasure. Did you guys see Josh Klein yesterday? The Vikings give him a 3-year, $15 million deal.
I mean, it's not too much cheaper than what he was going to get paid. But Titans, I mean, he's going to get paid like six and three quarters, I think 6.75 here, and he makes about five there. So a little bit of a downgrade from a pay standpoint. But, you know.
Well, he gets to be a starter.
Yeah, I mean,
hopefully.
And they view him as about as valuable as the Titans viewed him when John Robinson gave him the contract. And we all know how that worked out.
He's got a great agent.
Yes, he does. He did not play good football last year.
That is correct. Coming up next, we'll kick off the second half of the show with our man Joe Rexroad from the Tennessean. We'll get into all things March Madness and everything on the Nashville sports front. That is next on Morning Drive, Hour 3, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.